And speaking of immigration, the term integration is one which has to be understood correctly. Integration does not mean that immigrants must, as soon as possible, become more Irish than the Irish themselves, to use the phrase of my old school books. Migrants retain their own culture and identity, and they have every right to share the richness of their culture with their children. However, the experience in some countries has shown the limits of a policy of multiculturalism. Multiculturalism can overstress the specific identity of immigrant cultures and thus create a sort of parallelism of cultures, which can, especially in the midst of poor social and housing policy, create ghettos, either physical or cultural ghettos. Ghettos will only build up walls of division rather than break down barriers of misunderstanding. Integration of immigrants involves both respect for cultural difference as well as a sharing of common values within the culture of the receiving country. Immigrants, particularly, represent an injection of fervour and renewal in our churches. Often in Dublin, if you see a group of young people at Sunday Mass, they may very well turn out to be a group of immigrants. The church in Ireland has benefited from such an injection of enthusiasm and hope. The argument is often used that the different ethnic mix of modern Ireland means that our system of denominational schools is no longer appropriate. Now, I'm very much in favour of greater diversity in the patronage of schools, and we could talk about that for the rest of the morning. But the fact is also that most of the immigrants to Ireland are very religious and wish their children to have an education with a strong religious rather than a secular ethos. Those of us who have memories of the wave of Irish emigration to Britain in the 1950s will know just how much these immigrants were supported by the presence of Irish chaplaincies and centres in Britain, which offered them pastoral support and the warmth of a home from home. We have in Dublin, most of them now deceased, priests who lived on the camps on the motorways as they were being built, or worked in the hotels to encounter and live with immigrants and support them. Many of the more vulnerable immigrants to Ireland today, I think especially of men who are separated from their families, they need that same type of support, especially a home from home, especially if their language skills in English are limited. At a church-sponsored conference like this, I can feel that I can particularly stress the challenge of the pastoral care and the ongoing faith formation of immigrant Catholic communities. Immigrants, when they're far from home, can very quickly, also because of the complex and long hours they work and the different religious culture, they can lose contact with their religious roots. So it's a special responsibility of the church in the receiving country to attend to this, but it requires contact with the authorities of the sending churches, the help of specialised immigrant chaplaincies, which are not just social welfare agencies, but part of the evangelical outreach of the church. Emigration has a long history in Irish culture. I remember in particular the emigration of the 1950s and the 1960s. My own father emigrated for some years in the 1950s. In the 1960s, I remember how the number of vulnerable Irish emigrants to Britain was high. As a seminarian, in the summers, I followed the path of many young men who had left Artane, or another industrial school, at 16, and within a short time were off to Britain, with little money, little qualification, and no personal anchor in life. The numbers of Irish in British prisons was very high. Many drifted from menial job to menial job, or simply lost employment. And many today still find themselves alone and lonely, with little or no community support. They must never be allowed to become forgotten, or even worse, the abandoned Irish. At other times, emigration became a sort of safety valve within the Irish economy, as employment became scarce. And we are quite cynical about that. Today, we have once again a situation of high emigration, and a very high proportion of Irish emigrants is composed of third-level graduates. It's sad to watch at Christmas the toing and froing of young Irish emigrants who come home to their families, and a few days later must sadly go away once again from the country that had educated them, where they have their roots, but has not been able to provide them with sustainable employment. This year, there were many empty chairs at Christmas dinner in Irish families. So one of the major challenges for our government is that of addressing the challenge of high youth unemployment in Ireland. Our figures are lower than those in many countries in continental Europe. But if one builds into the statistics the level of recent youth emigration, then the instance of real youth joblessness is high. Jobs are created not by governments, but by entrepreneurship and business. But government has the responsibility to ensure a favourable environment for the creation of youth employment. Ireland has very high quotas of talented young entrepreneurs, but I hear often the difficulties they encounter, for example, in getting finance to start a business. It's vital for employment to ensure that entrepreneurship and creativity can flourish among the young. But we also have to ensure that that job opportunity reaches out to the less advantaged in society. Our educational system has to foster creativity, but also equity and inclusiveness for young people. And that, the creation of employment, will help stem emigration, and will also, as was the case until quite recently, encourage the return of successful Irish talent to our economy and our society. Migration is an intrinsic part of the DNA of a globalised economy and a globalised world. Do we really believe that? Do we accept that? And what are the consequences? At the root of that affirmation isn't just a reflection on the nature of a globalised economy. At the root of that affirmation is the fundamental principle of the interdependence of all of us as members of the one human family. When God created humankind, he created us as a family with obligations and responsibility towards each other. Pope Francis has continually stressed what happens when this notion of interdependence and co-responsibility is rejected or forgotten. He speaks of a globalization of indifference, which can only be changed by a broad-based change of attitude. And I quote again, quote that Bishop Field quoted earlier, a change of attitude towards migrants and refugees is needed on the part of everyone. Moving away from attitudes of defensiveness and fear, indifference and marginalization, which are all typical of a throwaway culture, towards attitudes based on a culture of encounter, the only culture capable of building a better, more just and fraternal world. And that's not just a political appeal. It's a real call to a change of hearts. A culture of encounter is never an armchair culture. An armchair culture where maybe even with wisdom and perception, we observe realities from a safe distance, ensconced in our own comfort zone. A culture of encounter is going out, meeting, embracing. Pope Francis spoke very forcibly on this when he visited Lampedusa, and he recalled those hundreds of deaths that had taken place among emigrants fleeing misery and poverty. I'm going to quote at some length from what he said. Who is responsible for the blood of these, our brothers and sisters? Nobody. That's our answer. It isn't me. I don't have anything to do with it. It must be someone else, but certainly not me. Yet God is asking each of us, where is the blood of your brother who cries out to me? Quote from the book of Genesis. Today, no one in our world feels responsible. We've lost a sense of responsibility for our brothers and sisters. We've fallen into the hypocrisy of the priest and the Levite, whom Jesus described in the parable of the Good Samaritan. We see our brother half dead on the side of the road. And perhaps we say to ourselves, poor soul, and then go on our way. It's not our responsibility. And with that, we feel reassured and assuaged. I continue the quote. The culture of comfort, which makes us think only of ourselves, makes us insensitive to the cries of other people. makes us live in a soap bubble, which, however lovely, is insubstantial. They offer a fleeting and empty illusion, which results in indifference to others. Indeed, it leads to the globalization of indifference. In this globalized world, we've fallen into globalized indifference. We become used to the suffering of others. It doesn't affect me, doesn't concern me, it's none of my business. And finally, he quoted a figure in the work of the Italian writer Manzoni. The figure's name was the unnamed. And he said, the globalization of indifference makes us all unnamed, responsible, yet nameless and faceless. My hope is that this conference will arouse within the church not just political concern, but a real change of attitude. The church must be a space where real human concern reaches out from our hearts to the migrant or the refugee as a brother and sister, and embraces the migrant really with that Caritas Christi, the charity of Jesus Christ, which is the mark of the Christian life. If we don't change attitude and heart, then we will work on the calculations of narrow economic self-interest, and the thought patterns behind that Swiss referendum will become our model, which will be approved and spread. Thank you.